Good afternoon and welcome to the next edition of the Patika Wealth Management Group call series. My name is James Patika and I'm joined by John Patika Jr., who's the portfolio manager on our team, the Patika Wealth Management Group here in Clearwater, Florida. And our guest today is Sebastian Manegra, who is an executive director with UBS Asset Management. And he leads a team of investment strategists focused on a variety of topics ranging from asset allocation, multi-asset investing, portfolio construction, and most relevant for our discussion today is tax management and direct indexing. And we're happy you can join us today, Sebastian. And with that, I'll welcome you to the call.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Sebastian.
Thanks, really appreciate you spending some time with us.
Excited to be on. Yeah, absolutely.
I tell you what, tax management has been like the number one topic this year, especially it being an election year and just not knowing what's going to happen going forward. So I think this is pretty relevant information. And one of the strategies that you and your team do up at UBS Asset Management up north in New Jersey is this direct indexing. And I think it's a really interesting strategy, and I think it applies to a lot of different people. Could you talk a little bit about how direct indexing has become popular in our industry?
Yeah, absolutely, John. And, you know, not to correct you, but we're in New York City as well as spread across a couple other places. But, you know, super happy to be on. I think taxes are top of mind for most of our clients, definitely at year end, definitely during election years. But I think generally it's such an important topic. And direct indexing has come and become this very popular topic that we read about, that we hear about. And if it's right with you, I think a very short history lesson here without getting too in the weeds. And it really dates back to around the late 1970s, when mutual funds first came about, right? That was kind of the main way through which an investor was investing in markets was through mutual funds. Then fast forward to the 90s and you get the development of the ETF. And, you know, that was a huge development in the industry for a couple of reasons. But one key reason when it comes to taxes was around the tax deferment that ETFs enjoy, where you're not getting the same amount of distributions as you do with mutual funds. So I think taxable investors really liked that tax efficiency that came with ETFs, as well as the simplicity and the lower fees and a lot of the other components that have driven the ETF market. And we've seen ETFs become prevalent, probably one of the faster growing types of investment vehicles. But fast forward to now, and the conversation has transitioned to direct indexing. So what is it and how is it different from what I mentioned? Well, really the idea behind direct indexing is that you're still tracking some index, right? And I know that the name kind of gives it away, so that isn't super insightful, but you get to track a market like the S&P 500, for example, but rather than investing in a, what I will call commingled product, meaning one vehicle that inside of it has exposure to different companies and investments, with direct indexing for a higher minimum, you get to own a lot of the underlying companies and stocks in that index. So you actually own individual stocks in your account. Now, the S&P 500 has over 500 stocks. And with an ETF, you buy one security and you get that instant diversification into all 500. With direct indexing, what we do is we do generally what's called optimization, which is we're not going to buy every single name, all 500 plus names in the S&P 500, but rather we're going to buy a couple hundred of names, call it around 300 names, get close enough to the index performance by owning the largest and the names that drive most of the return and the risk of the index. So you're getting a return experience that's similar to the index without having to buy every single stock, with the addition of greater tax deferment and tax efficiencies than an ETF alone. And we can get more into that. But really what I think differentiates direct indexing from mutual funds and ETFs is flexibility. And I think that that's a key topic. It's flexibility of ownership. So because you own the underlying, you have more flexibility to do things like restrict certain names that you may not want to own, which in an ETF you can't do. You own those underlying, so you could be more tax efficient. through tax loss harvesting, another technique that we could talk about. You could gift to charity from your underlying stocks. So that greater flexibility, I think, is why you've seen such a dramatic shift to direct indexing in the industry.
Is it direct indexing just beneficial for taxable accounts, or are there any benefits for retirement accounts as well?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would say the answer is that direct indexing could be beneficial for both taxable and non-taxable investors and accounts. I would say that for a retirement account, the benefit comes more from the customization side of ownership. So because you own underlying holdings, you could restrict certain industries, certain names you don't want to own in your retirement account. So it's not about the tax flexibility, but rather the flexibility of what you could do with your holdings. And so, you know, you may have a client or an investor that has very specific goals with their investment account and different industries they want to stay away from, you know, like sin stocks, for example. And so owning the underlying gives them the flexibility to be able to restrict some of those names or tilt their portfolio. However, for non-retirement accounts, so taxable accounts, a lot of the additional value really comes from the tax management side and the tax efficiencies that you could get from a direct indexing account.
Got it. So it's more of the customization that is
exactly
unique when it goes with the retirement accounts. Okay. So let's stick with the tax efficiency. I want to go a little bit deeper there because I think that's really, really important part of direct indexing. I mean, what drives the tax efficiency in this strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'll start off by saying that unlike an actively managed portfolio where you have turnover, an indexed portfolio like this that's tracking a passive index has lower turnover by nature and has a lot of names. And what we see is that in any given year, even when the index is up for the year, there are many names or constituents inside of an index that may be down, right? They may experience a negative return. So just to bring that to life, if we look back over the past couple of years, I'll quickly go through some of the calendar years. In 2021, the market was up over 28%. The S&P 500 was up over 28%. And there were 74 stocks that were at a loss by the end of the year. In 2022, as we know, was a tough year in market. The market was down, you know, a little bit over 18%. And there were 357 stocks that were at a loss. But 2023 is actually an even more interesting story because the market was up 26%+ and there were 172 stocks that were at a loss that year. And then let's look through halfway through this year as a final example. So through June 30th of this year, S&P 500 was up 14%+ and there were 199 stocks that were at a loss. So why do I say this? If you own the index together bundled as an ETF, for example, right? You need the entire index to drop in value in order to be able to tax loss harvest it, meaning sell it at a loss to replace it with another index or another investment to book that tax loss. When you own a direct index portfolio where you own all these underlying names, what we could do and what the industry could do is take advantage of some of those positions that are going to be at a loss, right? Sell them in the portfolio to capture the loss from a tax perspective, and then replace those positions with other positions in the index that have similar return and risk characteristics. So what that means for the investor is that they stay invested, right? It's not like they sell something and then go to cash. It's they sell something that's at a loss and replace it with other names in the index. So they're still invested, but they get to book that capital loss, that realized loss. What they could do with that loss, obviously, you know, we would encourage clients to meet with their tax advisors and get, you know, professional tax advice. But generally speaking, you could take those realized losses and use them to offset capital gains, either that tax year or in future tax years, right? You can actually carry them forward. And so those losses could be powerful either in that same year to offset gains from other activities or other investments or in the future, right? And so for a lot of our clients, capital gains at some point in time could be an important issue. And so having these realized losses while still keeping up with the market on a pre-tax basis is a pretty compelling story or opportunity.
So people always say, you know, ETFs are tax efficient. Could you talk about like the tax efficiency of direct indexing compared to ETFs in general?
Yeah. And it's like I kind of mentioned this at the beginning. So relative to most mutual funds, ETFs are tax efficient in that they're not passing through every calendar year as many gains. Right, the client isn't paying as large of a capital gain every year on an ETF relative to a mutual fund. And that has to do with how ETFs are managed. And I'm not going to get super into the weeds there, but anybody could kind of read up on that. So ETFs are efficient in that they're not spitting out as many capital gains as their mutual fund counterparts. With direct indexing, it's not just about the portfolio not spitting out as many capital gains as a mutual fund, but rather because you own all those underlyings and you could be very active with your tax loss harvesting, you could actually generate what we call after-tax performance improvements. So it's not just that it is not going to generate as much of a tax drag, but rather we could generate potentially what's called tax alpha, which is through those losses that we can realize on paper from a tax perspective, those losses could be used in the future to offset gains. So we see them as valuable, as essentially helping you improve your after-tax performance. While on the ETF side, the capital gains are low each year, but you're still getting hit on dividend income on an ETF. There may also be some slight distributions that the ETF may have. And if you want to capture tax loss harvesting at the ETF level, you need to try to time the entire index and hope that the entire index drops in value from when you bought it so that you could harvest the entire ETF. And then you have to replace it with a ETF that tracks a different index. So it's just not as nimble or flexible, I would say. So bottom line is, look, ETFs are fairly tax efficient for a retirement account. For any reasons, an ETF is an interesting choice, but for greater tax efficiency and for greater tax loss harvesting opportunities, direct indexing is, you know, a great option.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talked about a lot of the positives of why you should own and do the direct indexing strategy. Could you talk about some of the cons or the downsides, risks to direct indexing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think we have to be fair with how we talk about this. I mean, direct indexing, first and foremost, usually comes at a higher minimum. I mean, you could buy an ETF with very, very little capital. So the barrier to entry to an ETF is much lower, and that's by design. Same thing with a mutual fund. For direct indexing, because you're accessing it through a separately managed account, you're generally talking about higher minimums. I mean, different firms have different minimums, but I think a general average I've seen is around 100 to 200K. So that in itself could be a little prohibitive for some clients. The other thing is number of holdings. Right, there is simplicity in an ETF. You own one security and that gives you instant diversification. With direct indexing, you do need to own many securities in the hundreds to kind of replicate that index. So for some clients, having so many different positions could be a downside. What we see is a lot of our clients are okay with that because the added value and flexibility makes up for, let's call it, the complexity of owning a lot of individual stocks in a separately managed account. But that's definitely something to keep in mind. And then lastly, if the goal of the investor is to purely track an index as close as possible, usually ETFs have lower what we call tracking errors, meaning they track that index very, 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 very closely. The returns of the index and the ETF are very close. They're not exact, but they're very close. With direct indexing, you take a tiny bit more deviation from the performance of the index. It's minimal, but sometimes it matters. And so, you know, it's important to understand the trade-offs and kind of pick what's most important. But that added flexibility of direct indexing is obviously attractive to many clients.
As far as tax reporting, is it a K-1, 1099 that the clients have to file?
Yeah, so most of these are 1099. These aren't private investments. And depends what firm you work with, but with UBS, it's fairly easy and you'd be in a better position to opine on this to kind of export your holdings, your tax laws. You get 1099s, so it's pretty transparent. And you could see your holdings essentially on a daily basis through our online services. So, you know, if you have an account, even if it's a direct indexing account, you log in as a client and you could see all the holdings you have, their performance. It's all, you know, fairly transparent.
Okay. Yeah, nothing much changes there. Just they have a lot more positions.
Exactly.
They're owning the index. But finally, like to wrap things up, I mean, what are some of the most like common use cases you're seeing for these type of strategies?
Yeah. So the most basic one is, you know, you have a client and they have a lot of capital gains, either from other investment portfolios that they have, from activities, and those capital gains are eroding, you know, their wealth. And so they want to find a strategy that helps them generate more tax losses that will help them offset some of those gains that they're generating. And so a direct indexing account could be a nice complement or satellite, if you will, to help optimize the tax inefficiency of other accounts they may have. So it's a nice complement when you're thinking holistically about your overall investments to maybe offset some of the gains elsewhere. So that's one. The other is what we call transitioning. So assuming you have a lot of positions that are highly appreciated that you've owned for a long time and you don't know what to do with them. Maybe they're sitting in a brokerage account. You want to get them professionally managed. You want to get them moved and managed by a professional team. Many times without tax management, the tax burden of moving those holdings is too high because what the firm or the portfolio management team might do is sell everything that you own that they don't want to own. And many times that comes at a high tax cost. And so many clients then become hesitant and don't want to move forward with moving those positions because the tax bill is just too high. With a portfolio like a direct index strategy with tax management, what a lot of providers can do and what we could do is essentially build a transition plan where we can take in kind a lot of the existing positions that clients have, run what's called a transition analysis to show what we would keep, what we may sell, and what the potential tax implications would be of doing that. And many times, it is a much smoother tax transition where we can retain a lot of the existing positions that clients have and not have to blow out of them on day one. So that makes it a better experience for the client. They get to keep more of the existing holdings they have. And then over time, depending on each calendar year, you know, their ability to take gains, you could continue to work on maybe moving away from some of the names they had to diversify more into the holdings inside of that index. So that is a huge one. And then lastly, I would say kind of in the same vein, you know, we do see some clients moving away from active management and trying to move into passive. And so if that's the case, if we have a client that is looking to exit an active strategy for whatever reason and they want to find a place to go, going to the ETF could be very costly from a tax perspective because you have to liquidate your holdings to buy the ETF. Whereas with a direct index strategy, you still get the passive nature of that investment, but with the ability, again, to transition those positions in kind. Whereas with a fund or an ETF, that wouldn't be the case. So I think those are some interesting use cases we see kind of across the nation when working with clients.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, especially like, you know, selling the business, and you know you have a business sale in a few years. It'd be nice to have one of these strategies to help racking up some realized losses to keep carrying over for that big liquidity event.
Yeah.
We are getting close to the end of time here. And I just want to ask, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap?
No, I mean, I think this is a trend that will continue in our industry. I don't think it's a phase, if you will. I think that a lot of our clients continue to speak to us about customization, about flexibility. And I don't think that's going away anytime soon because before all of that customization and flexibility was reserved for institutional clients or the biggest clients in the world. And now it is available to more and more client segments. And I think that that trend will only continue. And it's predominantly because of technology. And so we're really excited to be a part of this trend.
I think one of the best things you guys have is that transition analysis where you could actually see what it looks like to move some of these highly appreciated assets over and to have your team work on that. I think that's a really useful tool, especially for anyone listening to this podcast. If you'd like to have that analysis done, feel free to reach out to us. Be happy to get that, have his Sebastian's team run through that too. And any information on any other, the strategies that Sebastian's team runs, we're happy to send it out to you. Just feel free to reach out to James or I. And Sebastian, thanks so much for your time with us today.
Absolutely. Pleasure. I look forward to being on another time.
All right. Thanks, Sebastian. Take care.
Take care.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.